Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
For decades, communities across the U.S. have fluoridated their water in the name of public health. Fluoride strengthens and improves our teeth and reduces the childhood incidence of tooth decay. Yet Wichita, Kansas, and Pulaski, New York, are two of a growing number of communities that don't want fluoridated water. Among their concerns, government intrusion on personal freedoms, fluoride's rumored risks, and alleged corrosion of water pipes.
Our next guest is a top researcher in the field of dental health. Dr. William Bowen is professor emeritus in the Center for Oral Biology, part of the Eastman Institute for Oral Health at the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's also worked with the Food and Drug Administration, and he headed the panel on safe use of fluoride for the Center for Disease Control.
Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Bowen.
Hey, happy to be here.
We know fluoride is a naturally occurring substance in the water, but what exactly is fluoride?
Well, fluoride is a naturally occurring element that plays an important role in the formation of tooth enamel and strong and healthy bones. And it's generally believed to be essential for growth and good development. It also, of course, has the added benefit that when it's used in low amounts to help to prevent the formation of tooth decay.
What's the difference between consuming fluoride in our water versus applying it topically to our teeth, let's say using toothpaste or mouthwash?
Well, one of the misconceptions is that if you have fluoride in the water, that you don't need toothpaste with fluoride in it. And that, of course, is a gross misconception. They are both effective, but they're effective in different ways. Fluoride in the drinking water can be incorporated into the enamel during formation, and it strengthens it against acid attack. In addition, the fluoride in the water maintains very low levels in the mouth more or less continuously. And that is the ideal situation to have protection against cavity formation. In addition, the fluoride in the mouth promotes rehardening or remineralizing of early cavitation or early lesions in the enamel. The fluoride in the toothpaste, of course, is a much higher concentration, and therefore it also acts by promoting remineralization or rehardening. And in addition, it helps to reduce acid production by the bacteria which demineralize the teeth. And furthermore, it's only active in the mouth for 1 or 2 hours because it's cleared very rapidly from the mouth. So the two sources of fluoride are complementary and enhance the effect of each other. So that's why it's desirable to have both.
Now, when you talk about remineralization and rehardening, is this a continuing process of in the mouth, in teeth, or is this particular, I guess the question is, more effective for adults or more effective for children?
Yeah, well, this again is one of the myths that's out there, that dental cavities are it just occurs in young children. Cavities can form throughout life, and fluoride protects against cavity formation throughout life. Now, the rehardening part, that occurs after each carious attack or cavity attack. This occurs every time we eat sugar or sugar-containing foods. We get acid formed on the tooth surface, and the acid starts to dissolve the teeth. The fluoride helps to reharden the teeth that have been attacked.
I must share with you that many years ago, I had so many cavities as a child that I actually had to wear a mouth plate and put fluoride in it and use it topically maybe 2 or 3 times a day. And I realize now I must have grown up where they did not add fluoride to the water. How did it come to be that researchers realized the benefit of fluoride? And when was it first added to the water? And who came up with that brilliant idea?
Well, it's a long history. The original effect of fluoride was noted because in areas where there was excess fluoride, there was a great deal of damage to the enamel. It really was unsightly. And then the initial reaction was, in fact, to figure out how to remove the fluoride from the water. And then as people did more and more research, they noted in areas where there were very low levels of fluoride, you didn't have this damage to the enamel, but you had a much lower prevalence or incidence of dental decay. So what really prompted the addition of the fluoride to the drinking water was the observation during conscription in the last war in the 1940s, when 2 million young people were recruited into the army, and 900,000 of them failed the medical test. And by far, the most common reason was the lack of dental health, 20%. So dental decay was the largest single cause for rejection. And the demands for good dental health were not particularly demanding. All you need, in fact, was 3 teeth in occlusion so you could bite or chew your food. So that really prompted it. So the first study was carried out, interestingly enough, in Michigan, and the second one in Kingston. And fluoride was first added to the drinking water in 1945. And then the effect was absolutely startling. Within a year, we could see a reduction in the prevalence incidence of caries. And as the years went on, the benefit was as much as 50 to 60%. And we now in the United States have over 204 million people drinking fluoridated water. That represents roughly 75% of all the people who are eligible. And the benefits are truly phenomenal. For every dollar spent on water fluoridation, it probably saves $17 to $30. It's an amazing return on investment.
It is a great return on investment. And yet, in the past decade, it's curious to see that over 130 communities have chosen to stop fluoridating their water. And critics of fluoridation cite 3 reasons. They're worried about corrosion of pipes. There is that resistance to the government mandating what should be added to our water supply. And there's the belief, as you mentioned, that fluoride is harmful when consumed in the drinking water, but only at extremely high amounts. So how do you answer these critics? I mean, obviously, there have been studies that optimize the level of fluoride in the water, and yet people still hold on to this belief.
Well, of course, when you get people holding on to their beliefs as opposed to not dealing with scientific facts, it's difficult to have a constructive discussion. So, yes, there are some communities who are ceasing based on economic and other grounds, but the scientific facts show that fluoridating water is a terrific and highly successful and safe method of preventing this extraordinarily expensive disease.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
Now, Dr. Bourne, you have mentioned the communities that have chosen to stop fluoridating the water. Some of them are citing corrosion of pipes. Is that a legitimate concern?
I have not seen any evidence whatsoever that the adding of fluoride has the slightest effect on the corrosion of pipes. This is a postulated mechanism, or effect, I should say, that in fact is divorced from reality. It simply doesn't happen.
Now, what about the growing concern? It seems that a number of communities are basically saying, I don't want a lot of government intervention in my life. And of course, we see this in many situations. We see it most recently in the gun debate. But we also see it at a very small level in terms of, please don't put fluoride in my water. I'd rather make that choice myself.
Well, the fact of the matter is that dental cavities is a major public health problem. And it's in the best interest of our community and society in general that this disease is brought under control. For example, the public spend over $80 billion a year on treating dental disease. And of that, it's calculated about $40 billion it can be attributed to rotting teeth. The other point is that rotting teeth continue to be one of the leading reasons for people going to the emergency room. Also, it's one of the leading causes for people being absent from work and absent from school. So it is a major, major public health problem. And the nice thing about adding fluoride to the water is that it benefits rich and poor alike. And to expect people to spend money on treating oral disease who have barely enough to live on, I think it's an unrealistic expectation. So anything that we can do to support the public health benefits all of society and all of the communities.
One of the most powerful arguments made by opponents of fluoride is citing the recent Harvard Public Health study linking fluoride with lower IQ in school children. Now, scientists themselves did note that the fluoride levels that were studied were much, much higher than what's found in our water. I wondered what your thought was on this study.
Well, every substance or material, including water that is taken in excess, has harmful effects. And fluoride and anything else is no different. You take excess, you can expect consequences. There is no evidence whatsoever that water at one part per million or less in the drinking water has any effect whatsoever on the IQ of school children. None whatsoever. Right from the first studies done on fluoride, every single body system was examined to determine whether fluoride had any adverse effect. And as a public health measure, it's absolutely correct that should be done. And furthermore, it should continue to be done. So if there's the slightest hint of any problems, appropriate action should be taken. I can now tell you that over 175 studies alleging problems with fluoride have been examined independently by a multitude of government agencies, independent agencies, and have found no adverse effects whatsoever from one part per million of fluoride in the drinking water.
Dr. Bowen, if someone in our listening audience does not have fluoride in their water, what is the best way to get it, especially for children? What do you recommend?
Well, children 2 and younger should not be given fluoride. But after the age of 2, they should consult their dentist and their physician about the optimum way to approach it. There are several possibilities. One, of course, is using fluoride tablets, which can be sucked and swallowed, and that way you get both a systemic and a topical effect.
Is that prescription, or can you get that over the counter?
That is prescription. And then you can also have topical fluorides put on by your dentist. So in general, young children should see the dentist from about the age of 1 and do it on a regular basis after that.
Thank you, Dr. Bowen, for your insights and for setting the record straight. We appreciate your time. Dr. William Bowen is Professor Emeritus in the Center for Oral Biology at the Eastman Institute for Oral Health at the University of Rochester Medical Center. For more on Dr. Bowen and fluoride in the water, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org.
On next week's show, workplace health insurance programs are seeking more and more medical information from employees. But do you have to surrender privacy for lower premiums? Plus, if you've got back pain, we've got expert advice from a leading physical therapist on what to do when it strikes and how to prevent it from recurring in the future.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York. The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care.